We're going to continue on here on Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. We're going to do our weekly COVID update, of course. This has been going on. We're in what, month 9, nearing month 10, and it is fall in the and you know around the world for those of us who have four seasons. It's weird because I'm in Mexico and there's basically only two seasons where I'm at, so it's kind of a little bit different. But if you're in the U.S., we're approaching pretty much wherever you're at around the world. We're approaching the time where it's getting cold again, flu season, and there's that usual sort of concern mixed with, oh no, COVID's going to come back and be on the rise as things get colder again, and it might be time to lock down everything. And as we're about to go over just a couple of stories here, just showing you just a brief look around the world, that's exactly what we're facing. That the sort of prophesied second wave is here, we're being told by the media and by the pundits. Of course, we've been poking holes in that story for a while though, so we're going to continue to do that. But before we get into the second wave, I just want to show you two studies you might not have heard about on the mainstream, or maybe even especially those listening on KPFT anywhere else on Houston radio. This is coming from the Los Angeles Times, just published yesterday. Child care centers don't drive coronavirus infections, national study shows. And for those who aren't watching, it also then shows a very disturbing picture of four young kids in preschool in LA sitting alone at tables wearing masks and looking pretty freaking sad. So that's one of the costs of this. But this new study, it says, large national study published by the American Academy of Pediatrics on Wednesday provides some of the clearest evidence that child care centers, I feel like I need to say this over and over because they just, a lot of the media spent the last couple of months telling people, no, don't go to school, don't start school, let's get all the kids. And you know, and here we are with this large national study from the American Academy of Pediatrics saying there is no evidence that child care centers will hasten the spread of the novel coronavirus, even in communities where overall infections are high. Yale professor Walter Gilliam, who is leading the team of researchers, said, quote, "This is the largest study of COVID transmission in childcare programs that's been attempted in the U.S. and I think globally. These are very positive findings and they should be comforting, both to childcare providers and the families who rely on them." So think about that again. They're positive. Let's step out of the fear for a moment and realize that this is some positive news and something, as this lead professor said, should be comforting. So your friends who are still very freaking out and posting pictures of their kids wearing masks at school, maybe show them this, maybe send this to the you know, school bureaucracy and get them to think about it. They surveyed 57,335 providers serving almost 4 million children in 2/3 of the counties of the U.S., including Puerto Rico, and found that those who continued to work during the first 3 months of the pandemic were no more likely to have fallen ill than those who did not. "We found that there was absolutely no relationship," they said. "Working at a child care center did not put these providers at any increased risk of COVID-19. So this one specifically.
That's brutal. That is brutal. 4 million kids.
I mean, think about that, though. So this study is saying, like, the people who are coming into contact with the kids at the daycare centers and young children's centers, the schools and whatever, were not more likely to get sick. And then I'm going to jump to this other study just real briefly. This is from October 1st. So again, only a couple of weeks ago. "No clear link between schools reopening COVID-19 surge, global study finds." This is coming from Channel News Asia, but you can look up anywhere and look up this study. It says, "Widespread reopening of schools after lockdowns and vacations is generally not linked to rising COVID-19 rates, a study of 191 countries has found." But it says, "Lockdown closures will leave a 2020, quote, pandemic learning debt of 300 billion missed school days." So there's some more real impact. Children missing out on, well, it's state-run education, more like propaganda, but the point is they're being stuck at home, also being filled with the fear of COVID, as well as the parents who are terrified that their kids could get sick. This is done by the Geneva-based Independent Educational Foundation Insights for Education, and said that 84% of those 300 billion days of missed school days would be lost by children in poor countries, and warned that 711 million pupils were still out of school. And the founder and chief executive of the Insights for Education, which did this analysis, said, quote, "It's been assumed that opening schools will drive infections and that closing schools will reduce transmissions, but the reality is much more complex. The vast majority, 92% of countries that are through their, quote, first wave of COVID infections have started to reopen school systems." And this study found that 52 countries that sent students back to school in August and September saw infection rates rise during the vacation compared to when they were closed. In Britain and Hungary, infection levels dropped off after official school closures. So there's a mixed bag, but overall it's saying that there is no correlation between school status and infections. And he said that there is a need to consider other factors. The key now is to learn from those countries that are reopening effectively against the backdrop of rising infections. So before I go further with the second wave lockdowns, what do you guys think about those two stories? You know, one focusing on the schools and the kids, and then the other one more about kind of child daycare centers and the people who are tending to them, but both showing no signs of this COVID-19 spreading or at least increasing massively like we were told.
Man, I've been railing about the kids issue the whole time. It was just obvious that there is such a small chance, according to the CDC, the chances of a kid dying from this thing was like 0.00 whatever. So then, like, you know, you can only imagine how many are actually getting it. And just seeing that study with 4 million kids over that much time, you know, and we're still taking these measures, because I kind of, me personally, as a kid, I was very extroverted. I needed friends. And I'm telling you, if I had to be wearing a mask, I couldn't see people smile. I couldn't, give a high five or whatever. That would mess me up. And I feel really bad for any kids that's unnecessarily happening to, because we're going to have to look back and really see, you know, what kind of decisions we're making right now with what information we have. You know, it's one thing to say like, oh, right out the gate, we don't know what's happening. And it's better to be safe with the kids. And then it's another thing 9 months into it, we have data, we have studies from countries, within our own system, our own country. And, it's all showing that children are not transmitters, and that we should probably lay off of restrictions for them for psychological reasons, if nothing else.
I kind of have mixed feelings on it, Derek. I think it's like you said, you know, they're missing, a lot of them are just missing state school, right? And it does vary from district to district. I actually see some school buses around town in different areas. I don't know, you know, Johnny went a little personal with it as far as his experience. I think that if I was a young child and my parents could provide for me to stay at home, I would have preferred it. But I think as I got older, you know, and I do think, you know, we covered a couple of months back the story of so many people, the hunger rising across the nation. And we think about how they, sadly, dependent on one of these school lunches or something for one of their meals of the day, and sometimes a free school lunch and a free school breakfast even. And I don't think that's the preferred method, but the reality is there are a lot of kids that have been going more hungry because of this too.
Yeah, no, there's definitely those implications of the economic impact to children and to everybody, but also the food. I mean, there's so much on the horizon that I really hope people who've been listening to the show have been paying attention, not just with those, they're going to be chaos around the election or is COVID second wave, but that if you're paying attention, a lot of these global organizations, whether you trust them or not, are saying that there are food shortages on the way, that there is, you know, COVID has caused disruption to food distribution and food management, and that we are going to be dealing with some difficult times. In addition to what we said earlier, 26% of the United States, according to one analysis, let me pull that up right now, actually on screen for those who are watching. For those who are listening, it is from Axios.com. It's called Exclusive America's True Unemployment Rate. I'm not going to get into it other than just to say that they dug into the numbers and the actual unemployment number, the government unemployment number. The official unemployment number is 7.9%. That's what they claim, the government claims. According to this report, it says it's as high as 26%, and it says only 46% of white Americans over the age of 16 now have a full-time job paying more than $20,000 a year, and a mere 40.8% of black Americans. So even less. There's more white Americans over the age of 16 on very, you know, who are making very little money per year, just about the equivalent of black Americans, and the numbers just don't add up. So those are things also were existing pre-COVID. That's another thing to kind of mention. I don't want to get too lost here, but yeah, the real world consequences were pre-existing to COVID, and COVID has only exacerbated them. And this next little one, it kind of adds to what you were just getting into.
Another source would be like Shadow Stats will say the same thing, more or less, like a 25%+. They hit other stats like that. So if you're looking for a source besides mainstream for these sort of statistics, Shadow Stats is pretty good too.
And look, here's another one. Just in the last week, one of the main World Health Organization officials has literally backflipped and now is condemning lockdowns. The World Health Organization is now changing its COVID-19 stance, calling for leaders to stop locking down countries and economies. Dr. David Nabarro from the World Health Organization appealed to world leaders this week, telling them to stop using lockdowns as your primary control method of coronavirus. He also claimed that the only thing lockdowns was achieving, poverty. With no mention of, well, according to them, no mention of the potential lives saved. He said, quote, lockdowns have just one consequence. You must never, ever belittle, and that is making poor people an awful lot poorer. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as the primary means of, I mean, where the heck is this coming from? He continues, quote, the only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, and rebalance your resources to protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. And he specifically says that the main criticism of lockdowns is the global impact, explaining that poorer economies have been directly, indirectly and directly affected. Just look at what's happened to the tourism in Caribbean, he says, for example, or in the Pacific, because people aren't taking their holidays. Look what's happened to the smallholder farmers all over the world. Look what's happening to poverty levels. It seems we may have we may well have a doubling of world poverty by next year. I mean, we may well have at least a doubling of child malnutrition. So, I mean, this is insane. I don't know what else to say about it. That's insane.
Like, it's like all the things that we've been screaming from the rooftops have been legitimized, and also no one cares.
Yeah, I don't know any of do you know any friends who are pro COVID or, you know, not pro COVID, but who are pro lockdown, who are acknowledging this at all?
I've seen a lot. Some people change their tune on being so gung-ho about the lockdowns, because now they're just now starting to realize, oh, like, well, that stimulus check didn't really stretch out the way we thought it would. And then, like, you know, all that. It's a lot of people are starting to see the effects now of the original thing that happened maybe 9 months ago.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Micah? I mean, it's like science develops. I get that. Right. But I mean, they were so adamant from the beginning, like lock everything down.
I was believing, because I wanted to be optimistic despite all the darkness, I was believing that the truth would come out, like that. There are so many people, there's so many scientists and doctors and people in universities who don't work for them, you know, who don't work to expand the propaganda. But there's a lot of repeaters at all levels of intelligence, sadly. And I was thinking that eventually people are going to be sick of not going to the park, and they're going to start doing their own research. And obviously you, me, and Johnny, we can't do all this research. So I'm glad that more and more people are getting behind this and figuring out what's the true effect. And I thought, like I said earlier, seeing the effects on hunger and those stats coming out, and that this would start to make people wonder at which point, you know, there's a trade-off. And, you know, I also think if we're living in a dangerous time, that if we're not further advanced than we think, we look back and we think we're so advanced in different ways. But if we can reach everybody with the internet and media and all this, and we can't tell them just to wash their hands, there's something going around, we don't know that much about it, be safe and trust free people to make their decisions, then I'm scared of the long-term drive of that sort of philosophy more than the lockdown. But I thank goodness, and I believe each time, that people won't put up with it and smart minds will prevail and do research and work to see what the truth is. So anyway, sorry to be long-winded on that, but I was hoping back then that some of this stuff would come to light, and I'm really glad that it is, and that some of this, like you just said, is coming from some of these sources that, I guess for lack of a better word, the majority will give some credence to.
I just hope that there's time and that the public really does, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath, but that there's some sort of, I don't know, what, accountability for the decisions that are made and the people that have been affected. As he said, I'm going to continue with my little COVID wrap up. I just got four notes for you. For those of you who are concerned about second wave, a couple of weeks ago, we had a show titled "The Second Wave of Authoritarianism is Here." And that is probably more true than it was when we said it. Coronavirus: France declares state of emergency as nighttime lockdown imposed on Paris and eight other cities. French president says people will not be allowed to go to restaurants or visit friends between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. in these areas because the virus will get you if you're out overnight. Then we got from Mint Press News, Philippines to roll out national ID as surveillance state spreads across the world. The COVID-19 crisis and worldwide lockdowns have afforded governments across the planet the opportunity to implement measures of population control that were only unimaginable just a few months ago, relegated to Hollywood's most dystopian Productions, the Philippine Statistics Authority, the central organization tasked with collecting, compiling, and analyzing data in the Southeast Asian nation, has begun a large-scale house-to-house canvassing operation to pre-register 9 million heads of households and other adults in the country's lowest income brackets. And it's basically going to be starting on a voluntary basis, as many of these things do. And it's going to be a Philippine Identification System as part of the Philippine Identification System Act, which was signed into law in 2018. That's another kind of response, but I would argue, and I think most of us would say, these things were already in the process pre-COVID and have only been given the excuse now to expand. Then we're going to jump over to London. AI cameras introduced in London to monitor social distancing and lockdown restrictions. Vivacity Labs has more than 1,000 sensors in the city, including in London and Manchester. The sensors were initially developed by Vivacity to track the flow of traffic, cyclists, and pedestrians, probably as part of the whole smart city operation as well, and, you know, to help out with the environment and things like that. But when the country went into lockdown in March, Vivacity added an extra feature to the AI scanner so that it could register the distance between pedestrians. And this data is shared in a monthly report with the government. They said they've installed more than 1,000 sensors across the UK in cities like London, Manchester, Oxford, Cambridge, and Nottingham. Chief Operating Officer at Vivacity, Peter Milden, told BBC on Wednesday that the data is potentially, quote, useful for informing policy decisions regarding lockdown measures. And then we move to New York City, where in the last weekend, when the first weekend of the new lockdown, the city issued over $150,000 in fines during the first weekend of the new lockdown. That's New York City. 62 people.
Like a horrible place to live. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people leaving California and New York right now for sure because of this. And I hope that many of our listeners understand that, because if you live there, people are running away in droves. They can't get away quick enough.
My new boss just came from New York, and he said it may never be the same. How many bars and everything that closed down, it may just never
imagine
be
the real
what
estate.
It once was.
And in some ways, it might be more like what it once was.
Yeah, and this is, think about that. It's $150,000 in fines, but it was just 62 people, businesses, and houses of worship. Because, yes, they're going after churches, of course. But from Friday to Monday, so just this past week, because you guys are hearing this, over $150,000 in fines from 62 summons were handed out by city agents in the red, orange, and yellow zones, including 5 to non-compliant religious congregations in the red zones. Interesting language there. And then finally, coronavirus lockdown Northern Ireland to go into a 4-week partial lockdown after the minister there, Arlene Foster, announced closure of businesses as well as schools and the familiar limits on gatherings. It's all just reminding me of spring all over again, guys, and it's quite disturbing. It's really not something that makes me feel comfortable. But I'm sure I've been kind of watching the news from afar in the U.S. and specifically in Houston, despite when you look at the numbers. I mean, these are not theories or conspiracies. That you look at the numbers, that even by the mainstream numbers, it has gone way down. And we just heard from the World Health Organization before the break talking about what lockdowns are doing to people, yet the policies are still in place. You know, the lockdowns are still being discussed, the closing of school. And I mean, it's just insane to me that, like you said earlier, Johnny, that like there's positive news or there's developments, but nobody's listening or nobody cares anymore. They've already made up their minds.
It's so weird. It's really weird. It's like you would think that, you know, I don't know. I just think people are so confused. They don't know what's true anymore. You know, I sent my dad that video from the Tyler County video where they're talking about the numbers being off because of backlogged cases. And he just texted me back, "That's right wing propaganda." And I was like, I don't even know.
That really sucks, man. I feel for you because I think that we are in a time, and personally, I've been encouraging, you know, my friends and anybody who's listening to anything I have to say, that like, hey, now is a good time to try to reach out to the people you care about and, you know, tell them how you really feel or what you're concerned about and send them information for things that you care about. And to just sort of get that response, Johnny, like whether it's, oh, that's just left-wing propaganda, or that's just Russian disinformation, or that's fake news. It really is disheartening when you try to reach out to somebody you care about and get them to listen. But unfortunately, a lot of the stories we just covered are not being discussed on CNN or most Houston radio or radio elsewhere.
I mean, you can't stop caring about people just because, and that's part of what hurts about it, right? We can't stop caring about the masses. We can't stop caring about the family members just because of this. It's almost like we have to find new ways to reach them. I don't know what those might be. I think that maybe that's a whole other conversation that maybe we should devote some time to, is how to reach people. Now is probably more than ever. Everyone, you know, locked down. I guess a lot of people are on the internet, but the internet, what are they on? Google and Facebook? I mean, thank you for watching us on Facebook. Our audience is diminished on Facebook as opposed to YouTube. So thanks everyone that shares it. But at the same time, you get what I'm saying. It's already being filtered down. You talked about people being booted off YouTube earlier, right? Can't have mass gatherings, stuck in like smaller cliques. Where's the information? They're going to the web, but the web is being more and more controlled. So I don't know. We needed to, like you mentioned, we do have FM, AM radio. We have CB radio. There's other, alternative means of communication. And it's weird that in this advanced age that those are becoming more relevant in some ways. It's almost like during sometimes like a wartime scenario, you hear about little radio men here and there that have to get the message out. And so I think, you know, obviously you can put up posters, you can do all kinds of things, but I think we got to think that we still can reach people, and we got to figure out when they meet us back with not openness to it, what do we do? Does anybody have ideas there? Because when it's met, just like Johnny said about the person, I think it was his dad that he spoke to, it when they're met with that dismissive sort of thing, what do you do then? Do you go back, redouble your efforts, find more sources?
I think it depends on the situation, right? Obviously, if it's Johnny's father or somebody you care about like that, then maybe you invest more time. But at the same time, you also, again, you know, you're going to be the one knowing the person you're trying to approach better than anybody.
You have really good like conversation skills. At the end of the day, like the people who are trying to spread this message need to be able to do it in a calm and collected way, and in a way that's not this like coming off as, well, let me just shove all this information down your throat, because that could have been what was wrong with my approach. You know, I'm just like, here, dude, look at this thing, and then he's just like, there's so many ways you can dismiss that. So unfortunately, we have to be like really smart about how we present the information that we feel passionate about.
And I also think that you have to be willing to admit whenever maybe you're wasting your time. And I don't mean that like the person doesn't matter, that you have, like Micah said, you have to stop caring about somebody, because that's why it does hurt, because you do care about them. But maybe when you have to recognize like the best use of your time and resources, okay, this person's just stuck in their ways. That's my brother, my sister, my friend, whatever, but they're not going to listen. I can't, you know, I can't waste any more time and stress. I need to move forward. And if your goal is to reach more people, try to do that, or at least, you know, find some way to come to peace with that you tried.